Welcome to the Alex Dynasty podcast. We're going snap reactions for the tight end position for week number 10. Start off with Arizona. We have a Zach Ertz injury. I'm recording this on Monday afternoon. It's about 2 o'clock Eastern time. We don't have a formal update on Zach Ertz yet. So if it comes in as I'm recording this or something like that, I'll make a note of it later in the podcast. But Trey McBride comes in, and it does look like it's going to be a multi-week injury for Ertz is probably the big takeaway, but we'll see. I think we'll get a better understanding of that later on. Trey McBride comes in 62 of 68 snaps, so plenty involved there. Only 9 for Ertz, so we see almost a universal usage. For McBride, he runs 30 of 40 routes in this game, so only draws 1 target at a 34. So limited usage, 7 yards, but I think we're going to see a player that frankly hasn't played that much get more of an audition. So that'll be the big thing for, this team probably still has some aspirations for this year, but I think for us, one of the big things is to evaluate McBride, right? I think that'll be one of the big, the big questions. I think really there's probably 2 big questions for this team. For us going forward, will be kind of what does Rondale Moore's future look like, especially if we get some time with him, Marquise Brown, and Hopkins together. What's that sort of look like? As well as what does Trey McBride look like? Is he a guy we're going to be targeting? Is this a guy that we're interested in? Is this a guy where he doesn't really pass the flash test early on? So 90 routes, it's about a little bit less than halfway to our benchmark of 200 that I typically use, and he has 0.33 yards per route run. So pretty limited there in terms of the sample size, pretty limited in terms of the performance. We'll see here going forward what that can potentially translate into. And it's just still such a small sample, only 4 catches. And I believe that includes this week as well. Let's just check that to make sure. Yeah, the data is updated for this week. So he's got 4 catches on the season. So limited so far. We'll see going forward. Again, Ertz is going to be one. We're going to play him until the wheels fall off. I just hope the wheels haven't fallen off this one. All right, next up we've got Atlanta. Kyle Pitts, 2 for 28. Again, this is a frustrating year for him. 33 routes on 37 dropbacks. That's really good. 7 targets on 29 targeted passes. Again, you'll take that, right? Those are better than what we've seen earlier, particularly the volume passing in this game, 37 dropbacks, the actual routes run, 33. That's good participation for Pitts, considering before he'd been playing, sub 80%, sub 70s, some in the 60s sometimes of the routes run on dropbacks that he'd be playing. So seeing this, it's better. It doesn't fully come to fruition here, only 2 for 28. But there's a potential for a quarterback change to Desmond Ridder. That's kind of one of the things we'll be watching for when we discuss quarterbacks in this series this week. But again, I think Pitts is an interesting buy low candidate if he slips to anything below like 3. Right? I don't think he's going to – he probably – honestly, the interesting – and I don't know if it's weird, but sometimes the tough parts of buying low on a player is that the floor just isn't – like it's not – it doesn't fall, right? I mean, if you look at keep trade cut, he's 2. He's still ahead of Kelsey by, a small margin there. He's a tier below Mark Andrews at the tight end position. But then you look, it's a pretty big gap between Hockenson at 4, Goddard 5, Kittle 6. That's a big gap. And then actually another gap to Freiermuth at 7. Although he's closer to 6 than 8. You start looking at that and you – like, what's the case for him sort of falling below a guy like Hockenson, right? You start looking and you start saying, okay, well, he's a buy low candidate. Well, how actually accessible is he? And I think the people that probably bought him at his ceiling probably aren't going to sell him particularly at a low number. So that's one of the things with Pitts. I think as we sort of study more player value and these sorts of things, and as we get more updated stuff like Keep Trade Cut, I think it's pretty valuable. We get more of an opportunity to see sort of where the market is, and we realize that even if he's sliding, even if he's down from where he has been, which was really high, you know, when you look at it relative to the rest of the position, he's still at a tier above. So it becomes a little bit of a tough way to get to him if you're trying to make a tight end specific trade. You know, maybe you go, you know, outside the position, two Pitts would be a way. You know, if you're kind of going from, you know, running back or something like that to tight end and tight end premium, right? We like those moves directionally. That might be an option, but it's going to be tough, I think, to pivot up to Pitts and to really see him as a buy low, because there's not going to be guys that actually get up to and match his cost. All right, next up, we have Baltimore. They were on a bye. We'll skip them over with the caveat of we're hoping to see Andrews back. And then we'll go here to Buffalo. Dawson Knox, 4-for-57 on 6 targets. A couple of late opportunities, and I was joking in their comeback attempt that it was very much Knox. Like, we're going to dump it off to Knox and let him get 10. We're going to dump it off to Knox and let him get 15. Like, it was very... and all of a sudden, like, they'd picked up basically half of what they needed to get in the field goal range. And there wasn't, I mean, his separation on those throws might have been 8 yards on average. Like, he just had a ton of room to run the way they were defending that. So they were running some prevent stuff. It was preventing them from winning. You know, I think he kind of blends in, frankly, at the position. When you look at some of the usage stuff for him, it's 40 routes on 50 dropbacks, 6 targets. Again, I wonder, like, as this team goes along, like, we kind of know what we have with Gabe Davis. It's fluctuating kind of week to week. Yeah, he's a wide receiver too. That's kind of where he's at. I kind of wonder what their third or fourth options, like, can Knox really step up? We haven't really seen him make a big, like, be a big time performer yet, right? We've seen him be a high performer. We've seen a high volume performer, especially with the expected touchdown numbers and the like there. But just hasn't really done that this year and hasn't really proven to be as much of a difference maker. I thought when he came out, especially the way they used him early on, like, I thought he could be a little bit of a mismatch weapon. I thought he could, you could get him on some smaller guys. He can run after the catch, do some of those things. And he just really has never blossomed into that. So, again, he's an example of, you got to kind of be careful on betting on volume at the tight end position, because it becomes very, it almost becomes replaceable to a degree, and it's very fluctuating, especially there's a, you know, that just look at the arc of Hayden Hurst's career. Like, he's basically two different stops been just a high volume guy. And right, he was up because the expectation was high with him in Atlanta. He actually performs to expectation and then he falls, right? It's kind of all over the place with tight ends. And I think, you know, Dawson Knox is probably a good example of that coming to fruition. So, again, he's much more that, like, this is why this is a range of the position we don't really pay for. Carolina, not much to see here. Ian Thomas runs 7 routes on 19 dropbacks. Tommy Tremble runs 8 routes on 19 dropbacks. Just pretty bland, and you can just kind of move on. Cole Kmet's becoming like prime Mike Ditka the past couple of weeks. 4 touchdowns. He's tight end 11 on the season, almost entirely on the back of what he's done the last 3 weeks. Only 8.1 points per game, but again, 5 touchdowns in the past 3 games. 9 catches, 115 yards, and 4 touchdowns the past 2 weeks. Only Goddard more points per game with his Thursday night performance last week. Again, this is pending Monday Night Football. Kmet's tight end 12 at Keep Trade Cut, which honestly, like, if you had sort of flash forward, you know, from the beginning of the season to now, and you didn't know anything, and you just were like, all right, let's pick up the mid-season numbers. Like, let's just pick up the middle of the season stats, sort of see where we're at. I'm like, oh, Kmet's kind of performing about what we thought he would do coming in. Like, had, you know, kind of in that tight end, low tight end one, high tight end two type of range, and, you know, some, maybe get some volume. They don't have a ton of else going on in the passing game, and, you know, he could sort of perform to there. It's not at all how it transpired, but it is basically the end result, right? This is kind of the funny part about Cole Kmet, is he's basically, that prediction has been right for basically the wrong reasons, especially early on. Now he's come on the last couple of games, been buoyed by the touchdowns, so all of a sudden he sort of falls into there. But it's funny because you hear people say, "Oh, you're talking process. You're just sort of, you're just taking a, an easy way out, or you're making excuses or whatever." But it's funny for Kmet. I don't think people were predicting three game spans with five touchdowns. That wasn't really what it was. It was more, hey, he's going to be among the league leaders in targets and routes and receptions, and all the production is going to flow from that. Really, really has not been the case. So, so again, I think he sort of can settle into that range and be sort of that guy, especially as maybe this offense gets a little bit better as the season goes along. Again, not a ton of volume out of Fields, right? It's still like a season high of just over 200 yards in passing. So still some skepticism there. Again, I think if the buzz starts to pick up on Kmet, I'd be interested in really pivoting up at the position for sure. All right, Cleveland. David Njoku hopefully coming back soon is the thing that we're hoping. But it looks like it could be a couple of more weeks. We'll be watching that as the week goes on, practice reports and the like there. It's Harrison Bryant in this game, 32 routes and 42 dropbacks. Pharaoh Brown actually has landed with Cleveland, and he had 14 routes in this game and drew 5 targets. So that's a note to just file away. Only 2 catches on 13 yards, but 5 targets, was actually tied for 2nd on the team and with 5 targets. Him and David Bell each had 5 targets. So just maybe a name to file away and more than really act on at this point. It's not a big usage thing, but maybe that's something that could trend positively in future weeks. Dallas, Dalton Schultz coming alive a little bit here. 6 for 54 and a touchdown. He's 3rd in expected points per game over the past month. It's 13.5 expected points per game in the last 3 games. He's scoring 13.6. He's tight end 11 to keep trade cut. Again, that seems like a palatable bet for that volume. And where I didn't like him was, you're paying tight end 5, tight end 6 prices, right? If you're paying several slots down, it's more rounds later. That's much more palatable for me. And I think it's a much easier way to return that cost and to exceed the cost than up higher at the position, in the mid, we'll call it like the mid tight end ones, because it's a really tough place to exceed expectation, right? That's part of the problem with that range as a position. It's really, really hard to beat those expectations, because it doesn't. And if you're playing to them, you can really blend in with guys later on. So that's really kind of the tough part there, especially with tight end. Denver. This was a bit of a down game for Greg Dulcich. He ran 40 routes on 49 dropbacks, only 1 catch for 11 yards on 4 targets. He's up to tight end 8 on the season already. So some good performance there for him sort of overall on the year. But not, and again, that was in some limited, tight end 8 in points per game, I meant to say. He slipped to tight end 9 after Sunday night football. So yeah, I mean, it's okay. Again, it's like, that's kind of, again, where does that position really blend in? It's in that range. But I would sort of point to, hey, we're 4 games in, already performing like a top 10 guy, top 12, right? Top 15. Like, there's not much difference sort of in that range. But you can look at the metrics and say, all right, I'm actually pretty encouraged, especially with he's really, really operating into a headwind with this offense right now, would sort of be the big thing that I would say. But 13 catches, 193, and a touchdown. And I believe, I'll just check this here, that he is among the leaders in actually yards per catch. Jordan Akins is the only guy with like any semblance of volume that ranks better than him. in terms of yards per catch. So good stuff there for Dulcich. Encouraged about him going forward, even though this is kind of a dud game. Detroit, not a ton to really write home here about. I think the maybe the big note would be that James Mitchell is going to be more of a long hold than anything. He plays behind Brock Wright, who plays 47 snaps out of 62. Wright runs 10 routes on 30 dropbacks. Shane Zielstra, 16 snaps, 10 routes. Again, those 30 dropbacks. Mitchell, 15 snaps and 6 routes with only one target. So each of those guys only targeted once. So not huge news, anything like that. But Zielstra doesn't catch a ball. Brock Wright catches one for 2 yards and a touchdown. So his looks like it counts a little bit more. I would say that, you know, this is it's a bit of a tough hold for James Mitchell in a safe leagues, because he's at tight end 3. You might be cycling in and out of guys at running back and the like there. I liked him sort of longer term, but if he's still sort of struggling to get back, what's his value right now? And you might not necessarily be able to hold that profile. So playing behind Brock Wright, who frankly himself isn't terribly productive and roster worthy at this point either. All right, next up we've got Green Bay. A very similar story for Tanyan. You know, we've seen an uptick game, but it's really the usage there's the problem. 14 routes on 24 dropbacks. He plays 41 of 64 snaps. So again, just limited in terms of that usage is the concern there. And we see one catch 8 yards, right? He very much blends in the range that he's in that tight end 2 type of range. Houston, Jordan Akins has a big game. He runs 21 routes to 17 for OJ Howard. Akins 3 targets, 3 catches, 72 yards. OJ Howard 1 target, 0 catches, so he didn't catch his lone target. Howard playing a little bit more than Akins, but Akins playing a little bit more of a passing centric role. A bigger percentage of his snaps, he was actually running routes on. Then Tegan Quintorino was much more of a blocking-centric guy after scoring a touchdown early last week. Brevin Jordan, healthy scratch. So I don't think there's a ton really to watch for. I guess you could stream Akins. I had to stream him in a spot and came away okay. And I said, all right, great. Double-digit points on to Cincinnati. Indianapolis. It's the same story, right? It's really just a split between these guys. Mo Alie-Cox and Kylan Granson play this week. Each run 15 routes in a game where Jelani Woods doesn't play. So, again, there's not a ton to really be confident in any given week. You do see Kylan Granson 4 for 57. Like, that's a strong performance for him. Mo Alie-Cox is not targeted on his 15 routes. I was sort of optimistic about Granson earlier on in the season, but just the usage, it's really tough with running half the routes to feel confident in a tight end. So you see a decent performance this week, but it's still a timeshare and not something you feel totally confident in. One tight end who had a big participation and didn't perform much was actually Evan Engram, 42 routes on 48 dropbacks. He's targeted 4 times, so that's not a great percentage of his routes he's being targeted on. He goes 3 for 14. He's tight end 16 on the season. Again, very much blends in that range. Score a couple touchdowns, he could be up to tight end 9, right? That's just it's a very flat range in that range. I like him as sort of a cheap pedigree guy, and you'll probably continue to get opportunities, but you sort of see some games in, some games out, right? It's a varying workload type of range of the position in an offense that's probably underperforming what it's actually designed for. Kelce, another awesome game, 6 for 81 and a touchdown in this one. He's tight end 1 on the season and probably heading there towards another one. This could be his 6th tight end 1 season that will jump ahead and have more tight end 1 seasons than anyone else this century. So really good there for Kelce, and just keeps churning it out. And we'll see how long he wants to play. That would be the big thing I would wonder. Like, him and his brother have a little bit, you know, started to look past football in terms of some of their podcast stuff. And, you know, his brother has sort of hinted towards retirement at different points. So I'm interested to see what Kelce's longevity is. You know, could he be the, you know, the Tony Gonzalez that plays forever? It seems like he's aging in a way that he could do that. Is that something that he wants to do would be kind of the big question that I would ask. But again, he makes such an impact that he kind of pays for that at a position where there's not a ton of other guys that sort of have a difference making ceiling. He's worth the investment from that perspective for sure. The Chargers dealing with a bit of an injury plague here. They have Gerald Everett goes down with an injury. Donald Parham was injured as well. And landed on IR. So Everett, we'll see what his status is long term. Looks like a groin injury that he had. Trey McKitty runs 31 routes, 5 targets in this game. Only goes 3 for 21, but that's really, I think, your big takeaway from a, you know, from a usage perspective. And I think, I do think they probably want to get a look and see at McKitty. They spent day 2 pedigree on him. It'd be interesting to see what they actually had, you know, but we'll watch and see if he's not a guy that could step up in front of you know, at this tight end position with Everett out. Friend of AOD Richard Rogers, a guy that we rode for a stretch a couple of years ago, back with Philly, I believe, was when he, you know, he was much of a discussion about density as well, about how we should sort of factor in how we should adjust our density stuff for stuff like, you know, aging and experience. He is third on the team in routes. He only runs 4 routes. It's 13 snaps behind McKitty's 45. So looks very much like McKitty opportunity if Gerald Everett is going to be out for an extended period of time. Tyler Higbee, the volume's should probably flow. There's not a ton of competition here with Cooper Kupp out, you know, and no one else really stepping up in this passing game. He has got 44 receptions without a touchdown this season, which is pretty incredible. He does have a decent expectation. He expected for like 3 touchdowns and has 0 of them so far. So running a little bit bad, but you feel pretty good about the volume here going forward. You know, I have him in a couple of spots. If I could get a second, you know, if I could get something sort of in that range for him where I'm rebuilding, I'd be interested in doing it. But I haven't really had that bite yet. Going to go back to the well after a decent game this week and see if I can't, pull off one of those deals. I just don't know in an offense. Like, the thing I think we know about Tyler Higbee is when the offense is pretty good and filled with good weapons, he very much blends in. He's competent to do more. Would sort of be the thing that I would say. I don't think he's a good one, but we've seen him masquerade as a 2 in an offense. Now we saw it when Kupp was out a couple years ago. Like, we've seen these things in short sample sizes, but I think maybe the lesson that we learned from this is that teams don't want to do that, right? That's not something that they want to do. And so we've seen it in, you know, I don't know, 15-game bucket, something like that in his career where he's gotten these 2 opportunities. And he's done pretty well with them. I don't know if it's going to be something that the Rams are going to revisit next year and be like, you know what, we really like Tyler Higbee as being the second most reliable receiving option in our offense. And if that's going to probably not be the case, right, now seems like the perfect time to sell and get cashed out, right? That might get you younger, it might get you some flexibility come draft time, and it might take some of your potential points down too if you're looking for a draft position. So that's sort of the angle on him. I'm going to revisit it in a couple of different ways. You know, put him in a package to buy low. You know, I'd love to, you know, go 3 for a 1st, right? Put him in, and if you can sort of try and pick off a first round pick that you think is going to be better than it maybe looks on paper, right? That would be a spot that, you know, I think Higbee is particularly useful to. You can give him to a guy that looks like he's contending and maybe will fall off. So that's sort of the thought there. Vegas, complete disaster. Waller on IR. Foster Moreau, 37 routes. He draws 4 targets. He goes 3 for 43 and a touchdown. So again, he's kind of on that streaming radar. But man, this offense is pretty rough. We'll talk about it in the receiving show. But my goodness, what a letdown without Waller, you know, without Renfro. Just a pretty big disappointment on the season here, and I'd be interested to see what sort of changes come to this team as the season progresses and as we go into the offseason, and, you know, coaching changes, quarterback changes, I think are possible as well. So there's a lot here that could potentially change. And it's funny because Waller was on Green Bay's radar as a trade chip, like, it, multiple times this offseason. And it makes you wonder how much different this season would have maybe turned out if that had been the case. Miami, it does feel like Gesicki is going to be one of those guys that, you know, almost, you know, when you look at him from just a longer-term value perspective, tight end 20, a keep trade cut. I'm interested in that cost. I think he's one of the more interesting guys sort of in that range. You know, when I talk about like 10 to 25, for example, like Gesicki at his price is a name that jumps out to me. So that would be one thing I would say. I think he's an interesting guy if you're potentially resetting. I'm going to do some specific buy low stuff this week. So I'll have that for you as well. But Gesicki's going to make that, you know, he'll make that list. I almost think, like, could he be a Hunter Henry type situation in free agency where, you know, he gets paid a little bit more than necessarily we thought, and that really can jumpstart his, you know, his value in the dynasty market, right? I do think Hunter Henry is probably better than he was from an efficiency perspective, but we've seen Gesicki, you know, have some of that, be able to frankly drive some volume and do so. You know, he did it. He was actually better with Waddle last year than he had been before Waddle got there. So we've actually seen him, you know, be able to compete with good wide receivers for targets. Just, I don't think he's a fit for the system, I think, is really the big thing. Durham Smythe is the other tight end, but not really participating in the passing game. Minnesota, we've got Hockenson is just slotting right into this offense. 50 routes on 56 dropbacks. He goes 7 for 45. So you really like that. The participation, big plays maybe to come as well. But is he kind of the second to Jefferson's one over the next, you know, over, let's call it the remainder of Jefferson's rookie deal, right? Is that kind of what they envision? And, you know, Thielen's good. Thielen's still good, but is in a decline phase of his career, right? Actually, when you look at this, and I was going to do this in snap reactions for the receiver position, but I'll do it here. And heck, maybe I'll even do it there. But you look at the routes run in this game. So they had 56 dropbacks. Jefferson played every play. That's notable. Thielen, 55 routes. KJ Osborne, 51. All right, this is out of 56 dropbacks. Hockenson, 50 out of 56 dropbacks. Delvin Cook, 44 out of 56 dropbacks. Outside of those guys, right, outside of those five guys, so the top three wide receivers, the tight end, and the running back one, there was a team total of 11 routes, 5 by Johnny Munt, 5 by Alexander Mattison, and 1 by CJ Ham. That's it. It's a very consolidated passing game, almost to the degree that it would almost look like you would if you were going to try and project out an offense. Like, I kind of have this theory that one of the ways that you should kind of look at if you're projecting an offense, and I'm going to do more work on this. I don't know if it's actually a book, you know, if it's book content or if it's, you know, something, you know, something else, but, or just, you know, my own personal knowledge. But one of the things I think when you look at offenses, I think you get a little bit of an over projection in terms of the share of the offense that players get projected towards. Put another way, I think you see guys siphoning off of the top of an offense more than we would think. So, for example, if you were to look at the percent of an offense that's taken up by guys that have, you know, less than 10% target share for a season, I think that's kind of bigger than we would estimate. This is like the exact opposite of that. right? It would be like, all right, if you were going to sort of, you know, what's the most logical thing? They're going to just funnel all of their stuff through these five guys. And that's basically what it's going to be. That's almost essentially what it is. So it's almost a, like an erroneous type projection, right? A projection that's super confident in exactly how they're going to go. Like, this is actually what it would look like. And those are super uncommon because you just see, you know, guys, you know, 10 routes here, you know, 13 routes here. Like, you see it as we sort of talk through this, tight end's a good position for it. It's just super rare that you see such a consolidation of an offense through five guys. Only one other guy outside the top three wide receivers, the top tight end and the top running back, even received a target in this game, and that was Alexander Mattison. And Kirk Cousins had 56 dropbacks, and he had 48 targeted passes. So only one of those targeted passes went to Mattison. Again, super high concentration. And I think if you're a Hockenson believer, I think you look at that and you say, all right, like, there's not a ton of competition for this opportunity, right? So as I sort of increase in this role, Osborne's fine, Thielen's good, Jefferson's transcendent. Right, I think you can really find a way. You're not stepping over bodies to try and get to, you know, a top three or four type role in an offense that's super concentrated in those top three or four guys. I think that's really the big thing for this Minnesota offense and for Hockenson in particular. So good opportunities there for him. A ton of usage, ton of participation already. So good, showing well in that trade so far. All right, the Saints, and Juwan Johnson leads them in both receptions in this game with 5 and receiving yards in this game with 44, and he has a touchdown. He has 7 targets, which is a team high. Frankly, a snap reactions early season success story. Again, I don't know how much we've actually cashed in on Juwan Johnson, but he's going to come back to the end of the season. We're going to be like, oh, wait, Juwan Johnson was probably better than anyone ever expected, and he, you know, doesn't really feel like he finished his tight end 11 or whatever. Like, but you're gonna look down and you're gonna be like, all right, well, he just kind of aggregated his way. Like, it's a bit of that, maybe at a lower volume. It's almost that Logan Thomas type role at the position. He has with you know, slightly less route participation. All right, the Giants, and they ran the ball 47 times in this game. Only 17 targeted passes, 23 dropbacks. When you look at it, it's Tanner Hudson, 8 routes on 23 dropbacks. They had Lawrence Cager, I believe is how you pronounce the gentleman's name. 45 snaps, but basically was just a blocker. He ran 8 routes. Mariac, I believe is how you pronounce his name, 2 routes on 16 snaps. So he actually had a target as well. So Hudson has 3 targets in this game, and he goes 3 for 24. And when you look at it, you're like, oh, it's actually not terrible. It's super, like, he's super lucky that he got the production that he did on only 8 routes. So waiting for Bellinger to come back, and we'll sort of see going forward what that, you know, what his arc could be, because we like positive, encouraging signs so far on him. All right, Pittsburgh. Pat Freiermuth, 35 routes on 40 dropbacks, targeted on 20% of his routes, 7 targets, 35 routes. So you like that. 47 targets on 202 routes so far on the season, 1.82 yards per route run, 2.5 expected touchdowns. He is 11.9 expected points per game, right at that tight end 5 type range. He's tight end 7, a keep trade cut. Again, if what I think you're really looking for at this position is, give me guys that have an elite finish in their range of outcomes. I think Freiermuth has that. Can he ever get all the way home to tight end 1? I wouldn't, as we look at the post-Kelsey phase of this position, I tend to think of like, all right, well, let's think of maybe this changes, right? Maybe we don't get such concentration at the top with just one guy. I think the next clear heir apparent to Kelce would be Mark Andrews. But he is a little bit on the older side of guys starting their domination of the tight end position. So you could think of, where do some other guys come from? You know, Goddard's about the same age as Andrews. I think he actually might even be older than Andrews. So again, we like, what do we like? Really high efficiency guys. That's something that we like. Freiermuth fits very much in that type of range. So I'm not, like, I wouldn't rule out over the next couple of years, like, he becomes one of the higher end performers at the position. Again, 1.82 yards per route run. And frankly, an offense that isn't, like, it's not with the wind at his back. And you just look, all you have to do is look at Deontay Johnson. Yeah, he has 7th overall in targets, and he's nowhere near being kind of the fantasy option that we thought he could be or have seen him be, right? So, and then you sort of flip that and you look at Freiermuth and you say, okay, well, that's same general climate of the offense where Deontay Johnson is wide receiver 41 and Freiermuth's averaging 1.82 yards per route run. And you're like, wow, that's interesting. So I am interested in Freiermuth. I do think he's, you know, especially in a premium format where you are rewarded for having high floor tight ends. I think Freiermuth is that guy. And I'm interested, like, he's one of the guys at his cost that I'm interested in, sort of in that tight end 7. He could get all the way home, would be, I don't think that tight end 1 is outside of his range of outcomes. It's obviously not this year, but if we're sort of looking at a post-Kelce phase about who that next generation is, Freiermuth is certainly a warranted being in that conversation. Seattle, Noah Fant, a little bit of an uptick over Will Dissly, but still only 50% route participation. It's going to be a tough, tough hold. Fant's tight end 21. It's a really tough fall for him. Again, you have to be really careful in that range. And I think as we sort of look at the names, who do we really like sort of in that after the top 3 or 4 guys, right? Sort of include Kittle in one way, shape, or form. It's really that we want the high production guys. We like Freiermuth, like Goddard. You know, I like Kittle, even though he's disappointed a bit. It's coming off a disappointment this week. He's been good in the past couple of weeks. So the down game this week. But Fant really hasn't been sort of in that category of guys. And now there's a blip in the road and he falls 10 spots, right? That's kind of that's the tough part. Again, I'm interested at tight end 21. Like if you were to say, hey, Jordan, next year, you know, we look out and remember when we were thinking about it in the offseason this year, where it was very much, you know, thinking about the tight end position and Gronkowski being a part of it, when we thought, hey, what's kind of the next, you know, what's our game plan look like? And we're like, all right, 4 guys in the top 20, Gronkowski and Ertz are kind of at the back end of that range, right? That's kind of what we were aiming for. And this upcoming year, it's going to be at the pace we're going, it's going to be like, all right, Gesicki and Fant, tight end 3, tight end 4 selections, we're cooking. Right, that's kind of going to be what I'm thinking of Fant. So is he a great hold right now? I don't love it. I do think maybe there's a chance for more opportunity. You know, Dissly has been a little bit of a, it's not even to say, he's not even a little bit. He's been a lot of an injury problem over his career. Maybe Fant could benefit there. But just the route participation is low. You know, if something were to happen to Dissly, I don't know if that 50% route participation goes a ton higher. They play Parkinson, like they sort of float in other guys. You know, heck, Parkinson played a quarter of the routes, ran routes on a quarter of the dropbacks this week. So it's just a tough situation there. But again, I like the profile at that cost. I don't know if he's going to be much more than like a premium flex play would sort of be the thought as we go forward. But if you're taking him at tight end 4 sort of in that range, which would be sort of how we would stack up our teams, I think we'd be interested. Aforementioned Kittle, low game, frustrating performance. I got to be super honest. The brilliance of Kyle Shanahan sometimes escapes me. 8.6 yards per attempt in this game. Passing, they ran the ball 41 times. I literally wrote down And I believe maybe one of them was a kneel down, maybe something. It's ESPN has 41, PFF has 40. So I'm guessing they maybe exclude a kneel down or something like that in this, or you know, they graded something as a sack or something like that. I don't know, but I just wrote down 40 bleeping carries in a game where Garoppolo 8.6 yards per attempt. This felt like, honestly, this felt like a game where the 49ers really had no business losing it, and their decision to take a low ceiling approach to this game and just say, all right, we're just going to play, you know, we can sort of be unoptimized and still win this game. It felt like they had a real potential to get picked off in this game because of it. But ultimately, the Chargers weren't able to overcome that. But that had every feeling of it, which is why it was super frustrating to watch Deebo Samuel only 2 catches for 24 yards and Kittle 1 catch for 21 yards. I'll say Kittle's participation, 28 routes on 30 dropbacks. Like, that's what you want. Right? He played every snap. Like, that's what you want. He's participating in the passing game. It's what you want. He just only was targeted twice. So those things can fluctuate. And hopefully coming back forward, we'll sort of get back on the right track is sort of the thought, my thought and hope there. All right. Tampa Bay. Again, the split between Cameron Brate and Cade Otton is back at it. Brate 15 routes on 30 dropbacks. Otton 9 routes on 30 dropbacks. Otten's a little bit of like, I don't know entirely what to do with Otten. I'm like impressed by him at one perspective, and then he has 1.09 yards per route run on the other perspective. So I think he kind of fits in the range of, he's almost looks like Cole Kmet a bit in terms of like how you, again, he's a cheaper version of that from a pedigree perspective, but kind of sort of in that range of, that's the bet you're making. Not a super high-end performer, but that profiles to being like, all right, he could be fantasy relevant. And that kind of points to what he's at. So, again, his numbers jump up this week because it's a good performance on a low number. He was like below 0.9 yards per route run entering the week. So it's a good jump up. But just know for at this point, he's buried behind Brate and probably hard to put in a lineup. Austin Hooper, I had his under in terms of receiving numbers, so you're welcome for his breakout. 5 receptions, 41 yards. I say breakout with air quotes around it. That honestly represents a breakout in this offense. Like, that's kind of where this offense is at. Nick Westbrook-Ikhina also broke out from the receiver position. 26 routes for Hooper on 38 dropbacks. So again, that's kind of the Robert Tonyan zone, if you were to sort of think about that. 7 targets on 34 targeted passes. That's pretty good, but I think this is a limited offense. You could look at that and maybe with a couple more weeks you feel a little bit more confident about playing Hooper, but this has kind of ebbed and flowed a little bit for him, so it's been kind of tough. And then Washington and Philly are playing on Monday Night Football. So again, I'm recording this Monday afternoon, and I'll have it up for you Monday afternoon as well. So 43 minutes of tight end talks this week. So again, I hope there's some ideas here in terms of some team building stuff as well as some potential trade stuff heading into your trade deadline. So that'll do it for this edition. Until next time, continue embracing the variance. We'll talk again very soon.